Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The foundation of one of the first black churches in San Antonio was uncovered during construction of the San Pedro Creek Cultural Park Project. The St. James African Methodist Episcopal Church was founded just after the Civil War by former slaves, and it was an important part of their lives as they navigated life post-emancipation. How should the AME church history be incorporated into the development of the San Pedro Creek Project, and what does this find tell us about the complex history that San Antonio has, and how we should be uncovering and developing history at this important critical time? The number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK, and you can also email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're joined this hour by Carrie Lattimore, professor of African American history at Trinity University, a member of the San Pedro Creek Project's Interpretive Plan Committee. Professor Lattimore, it's great to have you back on The Source.
It's good to be back.
Carrie Averett is the project engineer for the San Antonio River Authority. Carrie Averett, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Steve Tomka, a cultural resources program director with Rabba Kiesner, consultant for the San Pedro Creek Project. And Steve Tomka, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, David. Good to be here.
So, Steve, can you tell me, what did y'all find? What is I can see it looking out the window from the studio. It looks fascinating. I see a lot of foundations, and they look like there was a building here that was pretty significant.
Yes. Thank you for asking. Actually, it is a very interesting find, and it is a series of foundations. And when we started uncovering the foundations, we had a small section of a corner, and then 2 months into it, you see the picture that you see in front of you now, and it really consists of a complex of foundations, the earliest of which dates back to 1847. And the last part of it, the largest extent of the foundation, dates to the early 1904 time period. And when we began looking at the history of who occupied the site and what kind of businesses there were there, we've uncovered really a gold mine of San Antonio's history, including its industrial history and then the religious history and house of worship history that goes along with the AME Church. And the earliest, very earliest part of the history of that lot and that construction begins in 1847 with a soap making business. And that soap making business initially is started by German immigrants. It is later on in 1851 taken, purchased by Simon Menger, who is the same Simon Menger who's building the soap factory we have further north on San Pedro Creek. So this factory that he owned, the earliest one, actually predates the one that is nominated on the National Register. And subsequent to it, he sells the property to the AME Church, the African Methodist Episcopal Church, who uses the property, enlarges the property in 1875, and then leaves the property in 1877. Quickly thereafter, by the mid-1880s, a soap factory is established. A soap factory grows. It's one of the first soap factories, well, not soap factories, ice factories, I'm sorry, that is established at the place. The ice factory grows, booms, as a result of the importance of refrigeration back in the late 1800s. Then eventually the ice making business, sort of latches on to beer making. The German style beer making, the lager beer manufacturing, really takes off in the late 1800s. And ice and German lager beer making go hand in hand because of chemical and aging fermentation needs. And so it continues burgeoning that whole area until the late 1800s. When it finally is taken over by Adolph Busch and the St. Louis Company, and then eventually other beer-making companies take over the San Antonio, and the entire area is razed by 1904, 1905. So it has a magnificent history, 40-year history, that just a whole bunch of things happened in the area. And it's all encapsulated really in those foundations.
And that's right there on that one lot across the San Pedro Creek from the Alameda Theater.
Yes, all of that. It's about 49 years, and all of that is captured by those foundations. And then the history that goes along with it, that's published in various places, and we've been able to track it down and pull it together.
Carrie Averett, you're the project engineer for the San Pedro, for the San Antonio River Authority. Did y'all know all this stuff was going to be there?
No, sir. We didn't realize that the physical remains would still be there. We've always known about the existence of the AME church there and the significance of it, and it's always been incorporated into the design of the park. The earliest commemoration actually incorporated kind of a artistic overlay to show where the building once stood and have an inlay perhaps in the plaza ground there that had some inscriptions that helped tell the history of the AME church.
And Professor Lattimore, so a lot happened in that lot during those years, but really we really want to pay attention to the church. Why is the church so significant?
Because the church, in a sense, is the, a foundation of the African-American community. It's the one space that African-Americans in this time period really were able to exercise educational, political, civic rights. I mean, this is a period of time where African-Americans are working to move them, to press themselves forward in this. And so this is a space where they're coming together, that they're exercising political rights, probably. It's probably a school here. And it's also a place for people, as I said, to come together. And so that's the essence. Spiritually, that's another aspect of it. And so, in a sense, this is your community here. I think that in the early 1870s, probably 1872, you probably got 100 African Americans that are regularly attending church here. That's a pretty good number at that time period. And so you can see with that kind of how that community is developing, emerging. And again, you think of the period. This is Reconstruction, and so it's a very important time in American history, but also a very important time in which African Americans are in this aspect or this period of self-discovery.
So Professor Lattimore, the St. James African Methodist Episcopal Church, was it a national movement? I mean, there's a lot of these.
The AME Church?
Yeah.
Yeah, the AME Church is the oldest African American denomination. So the historical background of the AME Church really comes out of Philadelphia in the late 18th century, in which African-American Methodists were not happy with being segregated in Methodist churches. And so they initially first formed the Free African Society, which is a benevolent society, but it's also a religious organization. And then out of that, you have an African-American Episcopal Church emerge, but also an African-American Methodist Episcopal Church, which would be the foundation of the AME Church, which is really founded in 1816. And then after 1816, out of, I think it's Mother Bethel, the church spreads all throughout the country in places that it was allowed to. And so the African Methodist Episcopal Church really is a denomination that, was beginning anti-slavery abolitionist, focusing on African American issues. And so it's going to certainly spread specifically after emancipation.
And the idea with this was basically a network of these churches, and they communicated, and they shared resources. Were they able to supply resources to build the new church here in San Antonio, or was that just really from, was that grassroots?
It seems that it was grassroots, and that's, one of the things about the African Methodist Episcopal Church is, by its essence, it's Episcopal, so there is kind of a church structure. You have a bishop and all those kinds of things. So there's going to be some working out of those things. In regards to finances, there's probably some help, but probably not a lot. I do know that I was looking at an article from 1874 in which it talked about how African Americans were raising money. And so a lot of that is coming from their own expenses. So I'm not exactly sure how the diocese, if you want to call it a diocese, or the organizational structure is helping and how much they're able to, but I also know that the local church is doing at least a large amount of the work, if not almost all of it.
Before emancipation, during slavery, were these individuals, were the slaves allowed to organize into a church?
Depends on the state that you are in. And I'm not a Texas-specific person, but I can tell you in most states that's not, it's going to be restricted severely. You do have plantation churches that exist on plantations, but generally you're going to have masters exert a lot of control over the religious rights or of a slave. Additionally, large free African-American populations, which really isn't in this area, you may have independent African churches, African-American churches, but those churches are going to have a lot of restrictions on them as well. And so the oversight of Black churches is, in some areas, it's not even allowed. Say in Virginia, African-Americans weren't even allowed to be ministers after Nat Turner's rebellion. And so after the 1830s, the power of African-American churches to freely exercise their faith is severely restricted. And so once slavery is over, those restrictions are released somewhat, and African-Americans have more freedom to really develop the churches in their own ways. And so many of these African-American churches, which used to have white ministers in the period before the Civil War, now will be able to have African-American ministers. And so that's a transition too.
And so emancipated, now free men and women, the first right they really embrace or they really want to exercise publicly is the freedom of religion.
That's one of the first rights. Yes, absolutely. And they want to have their independent churches. And they had done that. Many of them were started independents in the late 18th century. But then as the antebellum period emerges and it becomes much more difficult, there's more restrictions placed, and then those restrictions are released after the Civil War. But that also leads to a time period in which African-American churches face severe, they can get attacked by the local communities or burned and things like that. So that's a time period in which you have a lot of churches that are going to be burned because they are a threat to many in the other society that want to see African-American rights and privileges restricted as much as possible. The church is a place that they see African-Americans exercising political, social, and economic rights.
So you mentioned that this is also a key to education. Many of these former slaves, they were denied the ability to be educated. They come to the church and begin that process.
Yes. The church leadership is probably going to be literate. And so in many African-American churches, you're going to have the pastor who's obviously going to be literate, but you're going to have, if it's a Baptist church, you're going to have diaconates, you know, the deacon structure. And then even in the Methodist church, you're going to have people surrounding him, trustees or others, who will probably be educated and probably be skilled African-American men. And so you're going to have a dynamic in each of these African-American churches that we have in San Antonio, educated people, artisans, skilled people, but also working class as well. And so they're going to be educating each other and helping the. So that's the way that that's going to be structured out.
So we have the uncovering of the foundation of one of the first Black churches in San Antonio. And that foundation is actually the foundation that for many lives that came from post emancipation here in San Antonio. How would you like to see the St. James African Methodist Episcopal Church honored as part of the San Pedro Creek Project? Does your family have history with the St. James AME? What can this find tell us about San Antonio's complex cultural history? Are you curious about other aspects of the San Pedro Creek Project? You can give us a call. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, and we're going to be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about some of the history that's been uncovered during the construction of the San Pedro Cultural Park project and the discovery of the foundation of one of the first black churches in San Antonio. And what does that mean for helping us understand what life was like during that complex time? And how should we preserve that moving forward so that future generations will also be able to benefit from this? If you've got a question or a comment, call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Did your family have a history with the AME Church? Do you have any stories that you want to share with us right now? That would be gold. We would love to hear them. We would love to preserve them on the radio right now. If you could call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Steve Tomka, the Cultural Resources Program Director for the San Pedro Creek Project, what kind of laws are there to make sure that these types of things just don't get bulldozed?
Well, there are local state and federal laws that pertain to the preservation of significant archaeological sites. And we are now in the process of basically doing the background work, leaving no stone unturned, so to say, to determine the history, you know, the details of who lived there, when they lived there, what they did while they were there, both in terms of construction, what is left of those resources, you know, below the ground in addition to the foundations. And basically we're doing that homework right now to pull together all the raw material that will be needed to make a recommendation and make a decision, which will be in the future sometime. But, you know, right now we're in that data gathering phase, basically.
On our Facebook post, Vivian writes, "This is an awesome find." Lee on Facebook, "This is important. San Antonio history should be preserved and the story told." Anthony also on Facebook, "I pray that the city and others involved in this project will do the right thing." Carrie Averett, project engineer with the San Antonio River Authority in your oversight of this project. So y'all had a plan in place for a cultural park facility right there, then all of these discoveries. So I guess things have been put on pause for a little while and you're having to adjust. What's going on?
Well, the next step right now is to determine the eligibility status for the foundation on the National Register. And so until we find out and have a determination of that eligibility, we're kind of in a holding pattern. And so we've stopped construction. And once we get a determination, then we can move forward with mitigation options and see you know, how we can incorporate what we've discovered into the existing design of the park.
We knew that San Pedro Creek was a significant part of San Antonio's development. It's one reason why we have a city here to begin with. It shouldn't have been any surprise that there was going to be a bunch of stuff under the dirt when you started digging, right?
Certainly no surprise. And to that effect, we have had an archaeologist monitor all of our excavations in all areas of the park. Anytime we're excavating below 6 inches, we have to have a monitor. And we've discovered literally thousands of artifacts, including a cistern that was in support of the Soapworks factory at the location there next to Martin Street. And so as we make these discoveries, we work with the United States Army Corps of Engineers, the Texas Historical Commission, and also the City of San Antonio's Office of Historical Preservation to come up with the best mitigation option when we come across these finds.
So help me imagine what we could end up with now. Do you think that we're going to end up with some sort of space where people are going to be able to go and see these foundations and read about what this was and the significance?
Well, it's hard right now to project what might the end result be. What we're doing right now is making sure that we come up with the best option and work with the local leaders to determine the best strategy and incorporate this into the culture park. That's very important to us.
Professor Lattimore, Carrie Lattimore at Trinity University, and you're a member of the San Pedro Creek Project's Interpretive Plan Committee. Does this seem to you like this is a opportune find and a great way to tell the story of freed slaves in San Antonio?
I do. It also it expands our knowledge of African Americans in San Antonio, and it also shows what a diverse space the San Pedro area is. And so any time you get an opportunity to tell real stories with real existence there that people can actually see provides an opportunity for people to kind of have hands-on history, but also tell the layering of that story. It's, you've got the church, but you've got other relationships that are happening. You know, there has to be obviously a relationship with the church and the Manger family. They're renting, they're buying, there's commerce happening. So there's a lot of stories that now you have the opportunity to tell. And so I just think it's a tremendous find. And I'm looking forward to continuing to work and to see how we can best tell the story here.
And Carrie Averett, with the San Antonio River Authority, is this the St. James African Methodist Episcopal Church? It still continues today, although not at that site. It has moved west to Richter Street, to west of downtown. Does that church population, do they have any say in what's going on here?
Certainly. Carrie Brown is our public art curator for San Pedro Creek, and she has also worked with our local historians to develop the interpretive plan. And so early on, there was outreach conducted with the members and the elders of the AME Church, and we'll continue that communication and coordination as we move forward.
So, Steve Tomka, when you tell the story, I mean, how long was the church at that site? It didn't seem very long.
That's correct. Our information is that they began renting space in the former soap factory in 1871, or perhaps as early as 1868. The congregation grew immensely during that early 1870s period. There was an enclave of African-American individuals in that area in San Pedro Creek. So when the church finally established there, that attracted a lot of the population. And so the population grew to the point where in 1873, Reverend Carson purchased the building for the congregation. And by 1875, they found that the membership was so large that they needed to enlarge the footprint. And so in 1875, they hired a contractor who added to the building, and we think we have the footprint of the addition of the building. We know where it began, where it ended. And then, interestingly enough, by 1877, the congregation purchases land for another church. This church is not the one that's currently on Richter, but one that was built at the corner of North Concho and Zavalla. And they occupy that facility, that church, probably as early as 1879, 1880. And they eventually then moved from that also to the one that's built in 1921 at Richter.
All right, we have a caller. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Mario is on the phone. Mario, thanks for calling into The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm with the Bexar County Historical Commission. I'm a member. And I'm just very concerned about the mural, and maybe they could comment on this, because that mural that's being developed needs to include the African-American presence on that mural. I did call down there and talk to Monica, I can't remember her last name offhand, and she said she was going to put me in touch with the artist, but I haven't gotten anything yet. But I need to know that we're going to include on that mural the African-American presence, and I'll hang up and listen for the answer.
All right, thank you for calling in with that. Carrie Averett, can you tell me about this mural and will that happen?
Well, I can't speak to the specifics of what's going to be included in the mural design. Carrie Brown, our art curator, is working very closely with the artists, and the intent of that mural is to represent the 300-year history of San Antonio. And I think if the gentleman could call in to Monica's information is on the San Pedro Creek website, and she could probably get him in touch with some folks to discuss the content of that mural.
What mural is this, and where is it going to go?
So there's a five-part mural that's going to be in the next block south between Commerce and Dolorosa Street. It'll be down on the Creek Channel wall, and it's actually on the same side and behind the Spanish Governor's Palace in that block.
Kerry Lattermore, professor of African-American history at Trinity University. So San Antonio has a lot of history. And frequently, you know, things like the Alamo and other stuff kind of crowds out a lot of important stuff that otherwise people should know about. And it seems like also there's a lot of crowding out with a concern about like the Canary Islanders and other Spanish and Mexican-American history that's important here as well. Do you feel like that we need to really sometimes fight for some elbow room to put some shine on what's happened for African Americans here in San Antonio?
I think so, certainly, David. I mean, I think in many areas, San Antonio has a tremendous diversity. And because of that, because the African American population really generally hovers between 8 and 12%, I think in some senses they don't garner all of the attention that the African-American population perhaps does in cities like Houston, Galveston, Dallas. But it's a tremendous presence in San Antonio, and one that I think increasingly we're starting to pay more attention to. And I think that's a nationwide transformation as well, that we're paying attention to stories that always haven't been told, and seeing the value that some of those untold stories are providing to our national narrative.
We're talking about the historic St. James African Methodist Episcopal Church, founded just after the Civil War by former slaves. Its foundation it's been uncovered with the development of the San Pedro Creek Cultural Park Project. If you've got a question or a comment, we'd love to hear from you. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Do you think we ought to carve out more room to be telling other stories, other histories in San Antonio? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the San Pedro Creek Development Project. When this project was proposed by Bexar County commissioners, they had talked about how this would develop parts of downtown, which previously had been neglected, and bringing some life to the creek, which is a historic part of San Antonio. And we're seeing that happening. We're seeing history being uncovered as they work on this one part, and they've uncovered the foundation of St. James African Methodist Episcopal Church and other factories and parts of commerce here. And other things are developing as well. Steve Tomka, the Cultural Resources Program Director with the Raba Kishner Consultant for the San Pedro Creek Project. Is there a lot more going on that we have? This has captured our attention, but there's got to be more stuff too.
Yes, the creek area was really a cultural boundary between sort of the Spanish occupants of the San Antonio River Valley and out west, which was, in quotes, wild Indian country prior to the early 1800s. And when occupation finally centered on San Pedro Creek by the mid-1800s, Spanish colonial residents, you know, new arrivals, immigrants to the country, to Texas, arrived and settled along the creek. And so by that point, by the mid-1800s, you have a reasonably large population of individuals living there, businesses fronting and backing up to the creek. And so what we're seeing archaeologically is a large amount of residential refuse, industrial debris, backing into the creek. Contrary to today, when we tell people that not to throw anything in the sewer system, back in those days, there were no sewer systems. So people basically emptied their trash, you know, on the banks of the creek. And so throughout this project, we're really finding a lot of that residential debris that tells us quite a bit about the history of occupation, who lived there, when, what were they doing. And so that trash to us is treasure, as they say in archaeology. But there is, every inch of it, reveals new secrets to us. And it's been an extremely interesting experience for us, and one that, we're happy to be part of, because it tells so much of that history of San Antonio and the creek itself.
And when you look at the creek today, the flow, the water flow is pretty anemic. But back then, before we had so much development and the aquifer was much more robust, was there a lot more water flow?
The creek actually was much higher, the water level itself, because since then the creek channel was widened and deepened in order to lessen flood possibilities. Water flow was probably a bit larger. We found that historically in many of the springs that emanated from the hill country or the edge of the Edwards Plateau, is prior to agricultural development, that occurred at industrial scales in the early 1900s, water flow was much, much greater because springs were putting out so much more water than they do today. So, yeah, water flow was probably higher both in the San Antonio River as well as the San Pedro Creek.
Well, we had the San Pedro Springs at San Pedro Park, yes. And they were very active at the time. It was a huge water facility there that was part of center of San Antonio life. Carrie Averett, the project engineer for the San Antonio River Authority, a lot of development is happening now. We're seeing announcements that like the Continental Hotel, which is opposite side of where the Spanish Governor's Mansion is from the creek, that's been sold. That whole block has been sold. Something's going to be happening there. And of course, the old jail is, That's being redeveloped as well. Are all these things being incorporated into the San Pedro Creek project?
Yes, sir. As the new developments come along, we're working very closely with the property owners and with the design teams. What we want to create is just one big seamless unit along the creek, and we want to make sure that all these new developments in the creek complement each other, so that we have in the end one beautiful area to share.
Has work been stopped because of COVID-19 and also these discoveries that are being made? Is that becoming slowing things down?
Well, of course, the discovery of the foundations has stopped activities in that area. The Sant Davila team, our contractor, is working to keep their crews working and move them to different areas so that we can keep construction going. The COVID pandemic hasn't really impacted construction. The contractor is taking safety measures such as wearing masks and social distancing on site, as well as checking temperature and checking the health of their employees that are working on the site.
Carrie Lattimore, professor of African American history at Trinity University, the development when the inauguration of the St. James African Methodist Episcopal Church in San Antonio, was that controversial at all? Was it welcomed by San Antonio? Was that unusual? Would other cities in the South still fight the establishment of these types of churches? What happened?
So just to make sure that I got your question. So when the church like this starts, would people support it? Is that the question?
Yeah, like the entire community, okay. Would they say this is a good thing, we want this, or was there hostility?
I think it depends on by the community. And I should step back a second to say that in Texas, there were a couple independent African-American churches. There was one in Galveston in which the Juneteenth ordinance was given. There were a couple of others, but in San Antonio, our first, I think, was St. Paul United Methodist Church, and that comes in 1866. And so I think that these churches are seen by many in the community as, outside of the African-American community as good things. I think there are others perhaps who weren't supporters of Reconstruction or the more radical aspects of Reconstruction that would find these kinds of churches as problematic because they were outside of the control of the larger society. And so I think it's some would view a church like this with tremendous suspicion and others would view it a little more positively. And that situation has continued throughout. I mean, even in the 1960s, you see the burning of many African-American churches. So I think the churches are always going to be, African-American churches are always going to be at the foreground of civil rights activity and resistance, because that's historically where those spaces have always been. The churches has always been a place of resistance to oppression, and those who may not, support integration or desegregation or opening up opportunities for African-Americans, they're going to place their interest into those churches and keeping them under control. And so that's the space of the church and why it's going to be kind of, in a sense, a lightning rod. I hope to answer that question for you.
Sure, but to you gave me a broad sense of what was what was happening, but locally in San Antonio, I really couldn't find anything that showed when the church was being established that there was a lot of negativity about that. And clearly from the growth of the congregation, it seemed like it was fulfilling a need, and there probably wasn't a lot of resistance to doing that.
And I haven't seen any either. I mean, I there's a editorial that was in a newspaper in the Express in 1874, and it talks about the support that the white community, and this coming from the pastor, gave. And so I think it, in this case, it does show support, but I think that also is the time and the place and the political environment in which that comes. And so, and also, you know, there's a relationship with the Menger family, so they're able to buy this church area. And so there are relationships that have developed that seem to be supportive of this institution.
Right. So I found an article similar and about the same time of talking about a revival that was happening at the church and how successful it was and how many new converts they had. I mean, the paper, the subtext of the newspaper is very important. And if there was hostility towards the church, they wouldn't have run that.
Correct. At that point in time. Now, that could change depending on the political climate a year or two later.
Yeah. And things move pretty quick.
But at that point in time, it seems to be at a good point, and the church doesn't seem to be threatening, per se, to the community at that point.
Steve Tomka, as I said, we can just look out the window of the studio, and I can see the foundations, and I see the work going on. And even today, I saw people, they were pulling out, look like some cylinder objects out of the ground, and are taking pictures of it. They're being very careful with what they find in this area. There could be more discoveries. What would you like to find?
There might be more discoveries at this site, definitely, and then further along the project as well as the development, the construction moves towards I-35. At this site, we know that much of the area was covered by construction debris when the various buildings were demolished. And so that debris is potentially covering artifacts and items that were at the site as that were part of those different industrial uses.
Or even being before San Antonio was settled, because this is an important location.
Oh, you bet. Definitely. We can easily go back. We know from San Pedro Springs prehistory that the prehistory of the area dates back to probably 10,000, 12,000 years ago. So there is no doubt that the possibility exists that, you know, some significant archaeological findings could be made dating back thousands of years, you know, either at this site or further along the creek. So, it's very exciting.
And real quickly, Carrie Averett with the San Antonio River Authority, the excitement that's already being generated with just these discoveries, does that tell you that you're onto something?
Absolutely. Especially when it's something that we've already known about and it's already been, you know, incorporated into the interpretive plan, and we've already had interpretive panels for it. And now that we've actually found, a physical remains, it really adds excitement to it. And after all, this is a culture park. So when you uncover additional culture, it really generates a buzz.
It certainly means a lot more to the general population. We can hear about history, read about history, but to go to a location and be able to have something you can touch and feel and know this is where this important church was established. It meant so much for San Antonio's history, the St. James African Methodist Episcopal Church, and it'll be there for generations to come now. I want to thank all of our guests, Carrie Lattimore at Trinity University, Carrie Averett at the San Antonio River Authority, and Stephen Tomka, a consultant for the San Pedro Creek Project. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.